And now, get ready, folks. It's time for Banter with Bob Sherwood and Dan Snell. Banter. And now, here's Bob and Dan.
Well, hello, hello to the world. Podcast Banter with Bob and Dan, to those who usually listen or watch. You know, on our Banter podcast, you've seen Bob and I banter. We've butted heads on ideas and politics and things about people. And then also from time to time, we have special segments about what's going on in maybe a special court case or something that's going on in the sports world or trends. And then, but the most important thing we really enjoy is a day like today when we have special guests and we have just a conversation talking about their life. And usually we find, and today especially with our guests, extraordinary, two extraordinary young people that you need to remember their names, because by the end of this podcast, which you'll want to watch, you'll go, I'm going to remember their names. Bob, why don't you kick it off and introduce Max?
And we call this, by the way, Conversations with the World's Most Interesting People. And so we've had Heisman Trophy winners on. That's the football guys. We've had professors on who talk about new ways they're teaching critical thinking in college. We've had some doctors on that talk about, you know, mental health. And we had a really talented musician on about a month ago who actually his dad passed away, and he started writing songs in honor of his dad. So today I'm going to introduce, can I call you Max?
Sure.
Max Brown. And sitting next to him is River, but I'm going to focus on Max. And this, I'll tell you the thing that impressed me the most. First place, your resume is longer than mine. And I'll tell you, mine's about 30 pages long. So this is fantastic. But I just want to read a few things here about Max. Here's what he's been called: a virtuosic 14-year-old violinist whose solo performances have been described as brilliant, thrilling, and breathtaking. The thing that impresses me most that you work with Ikstok. Wait a minute, I've got something just came up on my screen there, Dan.
Breaking news?
Ikstok Perlman. And you go to the Perlman music programs, and you've been in, I counted like 45 or 50 different orchestras you've played with. So impressive, right? I'll just read a few here from the list I have, but the Carolina Philharmonic, the Chicago Arts, the Delaware Symphony. And what impresses me, among other things, is, of course, I really like Royal Albert Hall. Did you go to London to do that?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
We'll play there, too.
Oh, my gosh. I love that Royal Albert Hall. I lived in London and had an office there for years, and fantastic. And you've gone to the Northwestern University, but again, you're involved in the Perlman Summer Music School. Unbelievable how talented you are. So now, conversation about where you are in your life. And I guess people that will watch this would probably want to know what motivates you, Max, to do all of this work.
Well, I love performing. I love connecting with people through my music. I think music is something that really can bring people together and, you know, bridge gaps between, you know, cultural backgrounds and political views, and yeah, I think that's what keeps me motivated more than anything.
Boy, that's so true. the world, America and the world, there's something about it does to your heart, at least to mine, when I hear a very triumphant song or a patriotic song or a song at church or wherever it might be. Music really does something to your soul. I think we all have music in our soul.
And also, playing with friends and making connections through music is also just really powerful and keeps me going.
Is your music interest go across broad range? I mean, everything from classical to just fun type musics?
Definitely. Yeah.
Really? Now, yeah. I'm sure people ask you, but do you have a favorite music piece that you do, or
classical music piece?
Yeah, pick one.
Yeah. Well, right now I'm working on Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto, which has been really fun. Piece I've wanted to play for a long time. That might be my favorite right now.
Yeah. Now, River, I see your Dan. Why don't you say a couple things about River to introduce her, and because I think she wants to chime in here, and we want to give her a chance to do that.
And we want to. River, welcome. You know what a dynamic duo. What a family. Your mom and dad. I'd be proud of you. The incredible stuff, River. You know, I like your brother. There's such a long list of things. You know, I saw you were. The Temple, I'm a basketball referee, so Temple University's always been, you know, I look at Temple as a basketball, but they have the Center for Gifted Young Musicians, and you're a part of that. And one of the things that stood out is you won an iconic performance contest. Bob and I always wish that we could have an iconic podcast, but you've done a lot of things. And at the same time, then you like to ride horses and climb trees. There's so many things I could list about you, as Bob did with Max, that you guys should just be really feel good about yourself because you're incredible.
Chime in on any of these kind of questions. So let's go. Let's just talk about the issue of music as being a big part of our life, because it's a big part of my life, by the way, right? I started at a young age playing music. I play music every day. There's music that excites me. There's music that I'm a writer, so I write books. And when I write a book, I have certain music. Now, when you're like doing your thinking about music, do you have any songs that you play or music that you play to yourself that gets you motivated and inspired?
Well, my favorite piece is Sardis, and because it's like, it has a lot of different things going on, which I like.
Mm-hmm. Can you go into more detail by that? What do you mean by that?
Well, it has like a technique called staccato where you go so fast that your bow like bounces on the string, mm-hmm. and like harmonics.
And so just briefly, when did Max start and then River, when did you actually first pick up a violin or to play something?
Well, I picked up box violin first.
Same.
And I don't really remember too well. And I probably played like Flower Song or something first.
Yeah, we both started with a Suzuki violin, and the first thing you do in Suzuki is you have what's called a box violin, which is a like a tissue box that's a little bit less tall, basically, like this mm-hmm. tall, this big maybe, that's got a little stick of wood attached to it to imitate like a fingerboard. And your first task is hold it on your neck with your chin without letting it fall for like maybe 5 rounds of Twinkle Twinkle Little Star played on piano.
Wow. So, and why did you do that? I mean, why did you get started? You just got up in the morning one day and say, I think I'm going to be the best violinist in the world? Or did you just do it by accident?
For me, I think it was, so my mom's a professor. And for me, I think it was like walking around as a baby on her campus and listening to like street musicians playing guitar.
Oh, really?
And originally I wanted to play guitar, But then we went to a bunch of teachers and they all said my hands were too small to fit around a guitar fretboard that I was probably about three at the time. So then I chose violin instead. And when I started violin, I played, I think, on a 1/32nd size instrument, and Riv did too.
Yeah.
Did you, Riv, did you the same thing? And then, so how many, like if you were to count over the years, how many new violins have you gotten over the years? Remember your first one, and then now you probably got one.
Yeah, 1/32nd size is 16th,
8th, 16? Yeah.
Quarter size, half, and now I'm just starting to use a 3/4 size.
Yeah. So you've had five?
Six.
That's right.
Yeah, she just actually started playing on a 3/4 size this week, which is very exciting because, I mean, the bigger the violin, basically, the bigger the sound that you can.
Yeah. How about you, Max? Have you probably had then more seven or once you get?
Yeah,
there?
I've had seven because I'm on full size now.
Is there so. One now? What's is there? When your mom's going to buy you that $400,000 violin, that's not teasing, but what's the next? Is there one up that you get or just a better quality? Or
no, full size is basically your biggest size. But yeah, I mean, there range. There's a range of quality in the all violins. They're full size violins. Like the very best full size violins have sold for like millions of dollars.
Sure. Really?
And then, yeah, I think the record was $20 million for a Stradivarius.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, because I noticed that Perlman, I was reading a little bit about him. He plays a violin that's quite old.
Yeah, 1700s. Right. I believe it's a Stradivarius, right?
Exactly. But I don't know if I read this correctly, but is it like a 150-year-old violin?
More than that. It's actually from the 1700s.
Which is incredible that the instrument can still sound that he plays an instrument like that's that old, but still sounds perfect.
Wow.
Yeah, and some people say that, like, the older the violin, the better it sounds, basically.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So you both, I didn't mention about River, but I think Max, for sure, you too, you've both been at Carnegie Hall, performed at Carnegie Hall. Is that right? Do you know how many Americans, let alone have wanted to visit Carnegie Hall, let alone be on stage at Carnegie Hall? I mean, it's like probably 1 out of 100,000 Americans, if that, probably the odds are probably greater. I mean, that's extraordinary. That's extraordinary. Someday, you know, you've already done it. How old were you, Max, when you played there at Carnegie?
I think I was 8 years old at the time.
And how about for you, River?
I was even younger, right? I think.
When did I forget?
Oh my God.
Six?
Yeah, I think you were six.
So did you want to, as just a normal brother sister, did you want to look at Max and go, na 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 na, I was younger than you? That's what I'd kind of want to do. But I'm teasing.
No, I don't.
You don't? You're so nice. That's so nice. I'm kind of a corny guy. I grew up in Nebraska. Have you ever, in your geography class, you know, Nebraska's a lot of corn there. So we do have the Omaha, Nebraska Philharmonic.
Omaha, Nebraska Philharmonic. Now, I've got to ask you this, and this may sound a little mundane, but so when you get invited to play at Carnegie, do they call you on the phone and they say, Max, can you play at Carnegie, or do you get a golden embossed invitation, or do they talk to your mom? How do you get an invitation to play there?
Well, actually, we both got the opportunity to play through a competition that both of us won, and who had, you know, an agreement with Carnegie Hall.
That had to be exciting when you kept winning and winning and winning, and there. Then you get the news you won. You're going. I'm going to Carnegie. That's like the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
That's like the Super Bowl or the World Series, probably, for violinists.
Well, I've spent some time in New York, and I know Carnegie Hall, but I also know the Carnegie Deli.
Yeah.
So what's the coolest place you've ever played at? I mean, Carnegie's pretty cool, but is there any other place that you remember? Wow, this was really neat.
Royal Albert Hall for me.
Yeah, that
Royal
was
Albert.
Cool too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah, I love the Royal Albert Hall, and I also love that the British have made the prices of tickets there very inexpensive, so that a lot of people can go there. Whereas we have a lot of situations in the United States where tickets are extremely expensive. But like I say, I lived in Europe for a while, and I had an office in London, so I love the Royal Albert Hall. Just it's such a neat place to go to.
Yeah.
Now, when you go to those places, how do you prepare for that?
Practice.
Yeah, practice.
Yeah. But I mean, how do you have to go through some mental preparation?
Yeah. I mean, I think being confident on whatever you're playing always helps, just more than anything. And then also just sort of putting it in perspective always helps me, like thinking about, like, it doesn't really matter how this performance goes. And then if I can convince myself of that, it usually goes pretty well.
That is so, I call it advanced thinking. And I can only say that when I was raising, I used to raise a lot of money in California for venture capital firms. And when I'd go in to visit somebody who was, you know, really important and, you know, maybe a billionaire, I would get really nervous. So what I had to do is I kept a little list in my billfold, a little 3x5 card. And it was every good thing I'd ever done in my life up to that point. And before I'd go visit them, I'd go through that list. It's kind of like you're saying, get mentally prepared. And then the final point on my list was, remember, this doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
They're going to
invest.
You
mentioned
they're
about
not
the confidence.
Invest, but nothing else is going to happen. Yeah, that's a great thing. I just love that.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned, Max, about the confidence, and I watched that. I think it was last year. I think you were 13. There's a video of you at the Carolina Philharmonic playing with them. And it, what I noticed is you went out and you greeted, I guess it would be the main, what do they call it, the lead chair.
Concertmaster.
Yeah, the violin master lady were very nice and polite, which is appropriate. And here's all these adults in this Philharmonic, all these adults. And what I really noticed is not only your performance, but your smile and the joy that you had in your heart and the confidence. You were smiling and you were like, man, this is a blast. You were both a professional at the highest level and the artist at the highest level, but you were also a 13-year-old young man having the time of his life, smiling and enjoying it. You know, I can remember I took piano lessons for 3 years. I wish I would have taken them longer. I remember my, you know, first couple recitals, I was quite nervous. So that leads to my question. Have you ever, like in the early days, River or Max, were you ever in the early days, were you ever nervous when you were, or was you just so, I mean, tell us that. Have you ever felt anxious at a performance?
Definitely. I think, honestly, I think when I first started playing, there wasn't really any like pressure at all, because and I was so young that I really didn't like feel any nervousness. And I would say that probably your nervousness, if you start that young, increases for a while. And I think really the nerves, you can't ever really make them go away completely, no matter how much you've performed. It's just about learning the strategies to be able to, push them aside in the moment.
Yeah, there is a gentleman, his name's Zig Ziglar. He was a motivational speaker, and I do some speaking, but he said every time he gets out there on the stage, and he was one of the highest paid, most worldwide known, he's passed away now, but he'd say he always had a little bit of, it wasn't fear, but it was anxiousness to begin and get that first where, you know, you made it through the first, in your case, the first series of in a song, or you can tell I forgot all my lessons, but the first, you know, when you really get going and you get into the flow and you start to feel good, he said, it's like the anxiousness to get there and to see somebody in the audience or to see somebody nodding, and you get kind of excited. And that's got to happen for you all.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, I can relate to that. It's always the first like minute or so of a piece that's the most stressful. And then you get in, ideally a sort of flow state where
flow
you're just in the moment.
River, you're 8 years old. Is that correct?
Yep, I'm going to turn 9 on June 27th.
Wow. Okay, so
all right.
Do you have any other 9-year-old friends that you practice with?
Probably has to have college players to be as good as
That's
she
what I'm
is.
Wondering, right?
No, not really. I mean, I have music friends, but I don't really practice with anyone specific. I have lessons with some of my music friends and things like that. I mostly practice with my mom.
You do?
Yeah.
And what about the horses? I mean, where do you ride these horses that I mentioned I saw?
We go in New Jersey. A friend of ours has a farm there and was nice and kept our horses there for us.
Oh, that's awesome.
Our grandmother is an avid horse rider and sort of taught us both how to ride horses and takes us out there once in a while. My mom, too, is a great horse rider.
Yeah.
Now, that would be a cool picture. Next time you got to take, of course, you don't want to drop your violin when you're on a horse, but get a picture on the horse playing the violin. Cool idea, huh?
So,
sounds like a cool idea. I would not trust that horse with my actual violin. Thankfully, you know, it's so amazing because you can find violins out there that are worth $20 million, and you can also get yourself a full-size violin for $30 off of Amazon.
Wow.
Really?
That's great, right?
I mean,
so there's hope for me? There's hope for...
Definitely.
Yeah. I could begin my violin career.
So
the big jump is when, like, you switch from, like, violins being, like, steam-pressed and, like, manufactured to where they're being made by hand. That's where you see, like, the biggest...
Where do they make the Stradivariuses? Where is that made?
Well, they're not made anymore. That's why they're so rare. But they were made in Italy.
In Italy, right.
In the 1700s. It was a family that were pretty darn good at making violins.
Right. Now, I also read that Itzhak Perlman, when he plays now, he gets at least $250,000 for like a 45-minute performance. Do you see in your future this is something that you're going to do for fun, or do you see this is going to be your lifetime profession?
Well, I think I'm going to be like a musician and an author, but I think that's going to be, I'm going to like play music for fun, and that might be part of my career too.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah, I think I have a long time to decide whether, you know, I'm going to go into music professionally and don't really know for sure yet, but I know music's going to be a part of my life either way.
Yeah, how could it not be?
Yeah.
Right? It probably occupies 70% of your life now, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that is so cool. Just a quick quote, you're listening to Banter.
When you're not playing, what's your number one thing you want to do?
I like playing soccer with friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I like writing my book.
She's writing a book right now.
Yep. About dragons.
About dragons?
Yeah.
Dragons? Really? Well, I could help you on that. I've actually published about 20 books.
Yeah.
Some are novels and some are like self-help books. But I don't think I could help you, though. I can see you're probably going to get your book done before I get mine. I'm actually finishing my fifth novel right now, and I worked on it today. So it's probably like violin playing or like musician in a way. I have to work on my book every day. Do you do that with your music?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the discipline that you have to study the music and make sure your music skills are good is the same thing for Riot. I've written 2 books. So Bob's written, like he said, 20. But I was told once, just write like 500 words a day, and you'll get the book done in a certain time. So just like you practice maybe for an hour and a half or 2 hours a day in the violin, if you just write 500 words a day, you'll have those dragons. You move over Harry Potter and all those movies, you'll be probably a movie producer directing a movie, and you'll be able to do this. what do they call it? The score?
The yeah.
The soundtrack and the score of the movie, direct the movie, and write the movie.
Yeah.
And we know you, River Brown Productions.
Yeah.
I'll be an actor in the movie, too.
Yeah, that's right.
Why
that's
not,
right.
You should, right? If you write the book, you get to pick who the actors are, right?
Yeah.
Now, when you're writing your book on dragons, River, what model? Do you have a model in mind, some other writer that you try to write like?
Well, my favorite book that got me into dragons was How to Train Your Dragon by Cressida Cowell.
Sure, right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good one, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, let me just real quick interject. We're going to continue on this great conversation. Folks, you're listening to a very unusual banter with Bob and Dan. We're not bantering. We're not talking politics. We're not talking business. We're not arguing over stuff. We're having what we call conversations with the extraordinary. And we have two extraordinary young lives here, Max Brown and his sister, River Brown. And you'll want to pass this banter around, share it with everybody, like it, because these two names, stay tuned. You're going to see their names in the future, and you're going to go, back in 2024, didn't Sherwood and Snell have them on Banter? And so we're going to say, hey, we knew you when, before, well, you're a star now, but you'll even be bigger star. So folks, share this with your things. Now let's get back to this conversation with Max and River.
It's pretty exciting what you're going through now. Do other people your age, other 18-year-olds or other 14-year-olds in your case, do they ask you about how they can be like you? Do they say, how do we become good at violins? Or what kind of advice do you give people on that?
Practice.
Yeah.
Aha. Uh-huh. That seems like a standard answer for you, Max, is practice is what does it, right?
Yeah.
Well, how many hours? I guessed maybe 90 minutes to 2 hours. How many hours a day do you practice?
About 3 hours a day, I would say.
Now, if you had to draw a line percentage-wise between practice and good instruction, how would you draw that line? You know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
Yeah. How would you draw that line?
I think that good instruction is what makes you a really good violinist, like an exceptional violinist. But I think practice is like the foundation that, mm-hmm. like, if you show up to a lesson without having practice, there's nothing you can build off of. I always compare it to, like, if you're eating food, like, the taste of that food is what makes it a really good dish, but, like, texture is, like, the foundation that makes it eatable, you know what I mean?
I agree with that, you know, I like to eat, and I like texture.
Same.
You know? Yeah.
Some could even say that it's essential that we eat.
I agree 100% with the whole concept of that. I lived in France for a while, and I always did like the French food because they have a good mixture of what I'll call how the food looks. Usually looks pretty good. It always tastes good, but they always mix their textures in the food. You'll have some soft textures and some harder textures. River, what about you on this is, for me, this would be a tough question for me, but for you, for an eight-year-old, I think maybe it's more difficult, but how do you draw the line between instruction and practice?
Well, I think that instruction is very important, and you wouldn't be able to, like, I would be making mistakes all over my piece if I didn't have instructions, mm-hmm. and when I performed it, I would probably be like, if I was in a competition, I would probably not get a prize. Yeah. But practice is really important because you wouldn't have anything to fix in your lesson if you didn't practice.
Right.
Ooh, that's profound.
Oh, profound.
You wouldn't have,
you know, I was saying that I write, I like to say I'm a writer. I actually do other things too, but let's see, I'm a writer, but I have an editor that I pay, and I meet with my editor every Friday for like an hour on the phone. And my editor basically looks at what I've written so far and, you know, instructs me on it. You know, like, you're missing this. Now, I'm not talking about commas and colons. I'm talking about storytelling, right?
Right, yeah.
My editor would love to work with you on your dragon book. My editor is also a professor at a college and went back to school at a midway in her life and got her PhD degree. But she's the same way. When I ask her, how do you become a good writer? She says, practice, 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 right? Just keep writing, right? And so I agree with that. I'm just really surprised at how you nail the one thing, which I think that is, it's practice. That's the key, right?
Yeah, and I think even more so in today's world where, you know, music always throughout history, a lot was sort of confined, especially like classical music, to, you know, the very wealthy people who could afford like expensive tutoring and lessons. But I feel like music and just all kinds of music has gotten more and more accessible with the internet. And,
sure, right.
You know, you can go on YouTube and find a tutorial on how to, you know, play the basics of violin that is
right.
Right up there in front of you. So I feel like that even more makes practice.
Yeah. Pretty soon you both are going to have instructors that want to for free teach you, so they can say, oh, I trained Max, I trained River, so they can have their name associated with you guys when you're big time down the road. So speaking of instructors, it's like coaches in sports. Sometimes coaches are screamers and yellers, and some are encouragers, and there's different types. Have you had different instructors? Sometimes they're encouraging in the way they instruct, and sometimes they say, Max and River, come on, you missed that note. You know, they're yelling at you. Do you have different types?
Yeah, I think I've been very lucky to not have any instructors that are mean in any way. And
good. Yeah.
So,
well, that's good.
Yeah, I think it's slightly different than sports in a way, because really the end goal of music is to, you know, connect with the audience and, you know, sort of put emotion into the music, not as much to nail every note or win or things like that. So I think music teachers tend to be in general a little bit, I've never had teachers that will get on me for, you know, missing a note in a performance or anything like that.
Oh, that's cool.
I have kind of a global question now.
Sure.
Of course, music is around the world. Different countries, different styles of music. When I'm listening to music, by the way, I usually listen to French music for maybe 20 minutes. Then I like to listen to Russian music. Then I'll say, give me some Spanish music or Hungarian. Now, give me your view of music around the world and how it's different than, because you must have been thinking about this, right? Music in China, or music in Hungary or Russia. How is it different than classical music in the United States?
I haven't really looked that up on a phone yet, but I guess it's just like different styles of things. Like, I've played Irish fiddle and it's pretty fast.
I saw that fiddling was on both of your bios. So, you know, you always think of fiddlers in Nashville or something, you know, or some peppy song. Do you both do fiddle, where you kind of go away from the classical, you know,
definitely
famous, and then you just have some fun with some corny, you know, the classic Devil Went Down to Georgia or something like that, you know, some. So you like doing that too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, Now, music to me is a is part of culture.
Yeah, definitely.
Right, part of culture. So when I think about other cultures, other countries, for example, I mean, do you ever get into discussions about how music influences the culture in our country versus other countries? Like, how is music affecting our culture here?
Yeah, I've definitely thought about that a little.
So this just popped into my head because I have a little ADD. I always joke on our podcast that I have a sign that says I live on ADD Avenue. So I have a little bounce around in my brain. You like soccer, and guess what's coming to Kansas City in 2026? The World Cup. So I think, Bob, this is it live. I think you need to invite River and Max and their family to come to your house for the World Cup that's coming here.
Actually, a couple of the games in that World Cup are going to be in Philly as well.
So really?
That is
cool. So that's close then.
It's going to be a big deal. Now, let me ask another question. Now, I want to get back to this culture thing for a second because I think it's important. In music affecting culture, for example, right?
Yeah.
Classical music seems to attract a certain type of audience. Mm-hmm. And country western seems to attract another kind of audience, right?
Sure. Yeah.
How is the music affecting these different cultures?
Well, I think really even more the culture affects the type of music that's produced. Like, for example, with country and western and stuff and traditional fiddle music, the roots of all that, it's a style that's made for just playing with friends in a jam, having fun in that way. And even thinking about things like if the music is passed down by ear or written on music, and how that sort of affects the type of music that's produced and how the culture affects that. Like, for example, with fiddle music, mm-hmm. part of the fun of a jam is when you're all playing the same piece, except it's the same chords, but there are like 20 different ways of playing that same piece within a jam, because back in the day, one person taught it to like five people and they all changed it a little bit, and it sort of mm-hmm. evolved to where it is today. And
I'm sure you get this a lot, but you two are just such exceptional people.
Very articulate. You guys really
are unbelievable. I mean,
taking these questions on the fly.
You're really exceptional. I wish a lot of other young people, I hope other younger people would even listen to this podcast as we deploy it, because I think you're inspirational. Even as I sit here, I'm thinking to myself, I'm going to get my trumpet out. I'm going to go back and play some songs again.
You should, yeah.
See, there we go, right? You're motivational too, right? Because it's inspiring. But your point about the culture always intrigues me, because I look at classical music, and some of that's been around for 100 years, 200 years. We're still playing it. We still like it. It all sounds good. But you have other types of music that have kind of gone away. They don't seem to be that. I say country western seems like lasts about 20 years and then it's some other fad. But classical seems to stick. It stays there forever. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It has certainly stood the test of time.
When you go to, do you have time to go to movies? Like when you go to movies, do you catch yourself listening to the soundtrack and listening for the violins?
Definitely.
Do you?
I find it so intriguing how film scores are produced. How they have to time everything exactly right. So
isn't that something? Because if you watch a production of a movie and there's no sound, no sound, people kind of take it for granted, but it really does build the emotion or the fear or the excitement.
Yeah, I mean, it's so seamless, and you don't even if you're not listening to it, you don't even notice it. And I think that's part of the, you know, the beauty of film scoring is that it just seamlessly blends into what's going on.
So, Bob, maybe we need to have them produce the official opening sound of Banter, you know, the official.
I would do that.
I don't think we can afford them.
I know. I was going to ask that. Do you get a lot of requests?
Expensive right now.
Does your mom have to say no? Do you get a lot of requests? Oh, could Max and River come play at this and that and every place? And
yeah, increasingly it becomes hard to decide what, you know, what opportunities to take and what not to, because a lot of things involve, you know, driving out like hours to go somewhere, or, you know, taking a lot of time to learn something. Or,
yeah.
We're sure glad you tuned in with us. The other thing I was thinking about on this issue of music is, do you think that with all of this talk about AI, you know, artificial intelligence and the ability to make sounds, do you think that you will be able to listen to some sounds made by AI playing a classical music, and I won't be able to tell the difference between that and Itzhak Perlman?
No.
I like that confidence.
I think there's a definite like innate humanness that you can hear in music, right? When you hear actual people playing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's something AI will ever be able to replicate. And also, you know, you see AI being able to now create completely realistic photos and videos and, you know, text. And one thing that robots still cannot do is write a good piece of music, because the generative AI we have today is just being trained on things in the internet. And it's really hard because, I mean, all you're doing when you write a piece of music is splicing notes together in a way that fits well, right? And you can't. And AI is so used to being able to just, you know, take things from the web and piece it together in a way that fits. Yeah. But when you're creating music, there's no one way that fits. And
wow.
The other thing that I would add to your response is what you mentioned earlier, and that is that, first, I love to watch people perform. Musicians, right? Because not only do the good ones connect with the audience, but you feel the connection. And this is why I think AI can't ever do that.
Yeah.
Not only the connection is there, but you can see, well, there's a term people use, they'll say, you know, sell the performance. Well, to me, that means connect with the audience emotionally. So, yeah. You know, I'm watching the performer and I can see the performer do this. And that's an emotion that you can't have in AI, and I'm not going to watch a robot do it either, because they're not going to have the same emotion. But I agree. You originally mentioned that, and I really like that, and that is the connection with the audience that you get from an actual performance. That's why I much prefer watching an orchestra than to listening to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you can see their faces.
I think it's equally beautiful to see, like, for example, like a chamber group, which is like usually like a quartet or something,
right,
with just like four people or something,
mm-hmm,
playing together without a conductor or anything, and, you know, playing in a quartet, you just like have to connect so deeply with the people around you, and it's just like you're watching their every move and just like being so together on a very deep level, and seeing that in a performance too, I think, like musicians collaborating with each other and seeing that connection between them is also.
Yeah.
And I want to stay on this point for a second, but Dan always watches our timing. So Dan, how are we doing on our time?
We got about 5 to 6 minutes left. Yeah. Okay. So you ask a question, I got one question, and then
I want to stay on this collaboration point because it's so important. Today in companies, they all talk about teamwork. How to get the team together, right? How to keep the team motivated. Right. You mentioned a quartet. That's the ultimate team.
Definitely.
Without a conductor, right? It's the ultimate teamwork because they have to just feel each what each other is doing. So that's to me, it's like a quartet and even an orchestra. The orchestra has a conductor, but it's the ultimate team.
Yeah, totally.
Nobody usually is going to carry the show, right? And there's a great analogy, I think, between teamwork for musicians in a quartet or an orchestra and teamwork in a company. Companies are trying to emulate that. They're trying to emulate the orchestra inside a corporation. Very difficult, right?
Yeah.
So that's just a great thing that you nailed. And that's the collaboration of a quartet is the ultimate example of teamwork.
All back the, to you, yeah. Dan. The people and the sounds coming together. Well, my question, and you kind of touched on it about writing, River, but for both of you, and there's no right or wrong answer, it's okay to say, you know, I don't know. Because, hey, I'm only 8, I'm only 14. But if you could close your eyes, and it's 20 years from now, and River, you're 28, and Max, you're 34, where would you, if you could just say your dreams could come true, where would you like to be in 20 years? If have you thought about that?
Well, I think, yeah, I really don't know, but I know that I'd like to be playing music in one way or another. I'd like to probably by then have a family.
There you go.
And just overall be happy, I think.
Yeah, that's be okay. Positive. That's a great answer. River, anything for you? You're going to have 2 or 3 books published and you're producing that movie we talked about. So maybe that's enough, huh?
But yeah, that's true what you just said. And same as Max. And where would I like to be in the world? I would like to, when I'm 28, sometime like visit a national park or something.
Yeah, the Grand Canyon. Oh, there's a picture. Yeah. Playing the violin at the Grand Canyon because it is spectacular, kind of like you guys are extraordinary and spectacular.
Well, I can tell you that I think we're getting ready to wind up here, but this has been so much fun for me. I have a big family. I raised 5 sons. They're all doing well. My youngest is a doctor. My oldest is a lawyer, and the 3 in the middle are working herself out in the computer world. But I'm just falling in love with you two. That's all there is to it, right? I can't imagine anybody talking to you doesn't walk away inspired, motivated, and in love with both of you. You are just wonderful, wonderful. And I guess I'd have to give some credit to your mom. She's over there on the side there, right? But a lot of it comes right from you two. You got the right DNA there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Dan, do you want to take
Well,
us
listen,
home?
Folks, you've been listening to Banter, a different kind of banter where we have conversations with the extraordinary Max Brown and River Brown. Remember those names because you'll continue to hear them for decades to come, I believe. Thanks for tuning in. Share this with at least 10 people, and especially Max and River. So much fun. Get up, give your mom a hug for all the things she does for you. I'm sure she makes sacrifices and encourages you to for all that training and everything. So
give her a hug,
call your family and tell your family thank you. So it's been great to be with you. And you can tune in anytime on Banter because Bob and I aren't always this nice to each other. So it's nice that you bring peace to our world.
Anything before we terminate today, anything you want to add? Any message to the world?
Sure, I think just keep on listening to music.
Yeah.
Keep on enjoying music.
I like it. I like it. All right.
Okay.
That's great.
All right. Wave everybody. Wave goodbye to our Banter fans.
Yeah.
Bye bye, everybody. Stay winsome out there.
Right. Bye bye.